Today's reading is Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds a house, the builders labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court. This is the word of the Lord.
Psalm 127. Well, it may be one you've read before, it may be not one that you've read before, but when we start building a house and when we start renovating a house, I mean, we've got to look at different things. Our church has just put down a new slab for a new garden shed. I thought I could be cheeky and show you that, but I'm not going to, you know. I want to start by challenging, are we building something for this world's time and place or for our eternal place? You know, is your life just for the here and the now? Or is there more? Is there more? Because I suspect there is more. And building a physical house is temporary. However, building a life is an eternal thing. We're more concerned, I think, with buildings and our physical buildings as the church than what we are with sometimes other people's lives themselves. You know, we find it repulsive if someone turns up and we find that graffiti has been put on the church. And it's something that can usually be fixed quite quickly and easily. But we think, oh, how dare they deface the Lord's house, and how terrible that. And I remember down at Albion Park, someone had used, I think it was crayons, on one of the original plaques on the church. And it really didn't take that much to get it off a brass plaque. You know, a little bit of heat, a little bit of dabbing with paper, and off she came. But when I look around at society, I see lives that are torn apart by drugs, by gambling, by pornography, abuse, loneliness, and often the church sits back and doesn't do much at all. You know, I've said that I had devastation of gambling in my life earlier, much earlier in my life, nearly lost my marriage over it. But you'll see, if you turn up at our church, we've got an anti-gambling campaign sign up on the outside of our church, because the world, Australia is spending something like $33 billion a year on gambling. You can't tell me that's not a problem. That's a massive, massive problem. And that's just the tip of one of the icebergs of the brokenness of our society. Well, you know, I wonder why people get into the drugs, the alcohol, the gambling, the abuse and everything. And I think it's because of the foundation of their life is on sand. It's not sure-footed sand foundations. We actually need, when we're building a house or whether we're building a shed, someone said to me, oh, why, when you're building the shed out there, why don't you just use some pavies and put it on top of that? I said, because we want it to actually last a long, long time and not have any issues or water ingress issues and everything else. So we're going to put it on a slab. Oh, okay. Well, we actually need a sure foundation for our lives. And you need expertise. You don't have to, you know, sometimes you actually have to go to other people and get the help from them. You know, I can't fabricate a shed. No one else in my church could fabricate a shed. So we actually bought a prefabricated shed. But we still need to put it up. And there's people in our church who are gifted in putting up sheds. And then there are some who, well, I don't think they could even put a cup of tea together sometimes. But anyway, that's just their giftedness. Different people have different giftings. And so sometimes we need help from others to make sure our foundation of our life is good. We need to be flexible and work around the ongoing challenges and changes. You know, when we went to put in the slab, I remember we were going to put it in and then we had a wedding on. And so I said, well, let's not put the slab in on a Friday when we've got a wedding on a Saturday, because it's going to have mud and stuff around. Let's do it on the next Tuesday. So you had to work with some of the changes and make sure that the weather was right. You know, you need to have plans for a desired outcome. Know what our destination is going to be, rather than always just saying, well, she'll be right. It'll just slap together okay. And you have to invest time and effort into it. Yep. And all of this, and we try and do sometimes all of this for ourselves without using the manual or the textbook, and we just try and wing it. I remember I was putting together something a few years back at the church, and someone said, "Are you going to look at the instructions?" I said, "Nah, I'll be right." I ended up with about 7 spare bolts and the thing wouldn't work. So then I went and had a look again and found out that, yeah, 4 of the bolts needed to be right inside the whole thing. And it took me a while to undo everything again and get it back together. But that's me being silly, and I'm not gifted sometimes to put some things together. So what's the foundation of your life? The simple answer for me is God, the creator and the designer of my life. But what is it for you? Because let's tease this out with what he offers, or what God offers help in help for us. Firstly, I think as we look at a foundation, the prayers, praying to God, reading the scriptures, show us the nature of God, and especially as we see answers to prayer and wisdom through the scriptures, we start to understand who God is. And then there are the immovables of doctrines, and these things are the immovables. The scriptures are the holy scriptures. We don't make up an extra book that then overrules it, no. And we don't do lighting of a candle and think that means, oh, I don't need to pray now because I lit a candle, so God should know what. No. Prayer is a personal relationship with God, you know? And so surrounding all of this foundation, we then start to look at the fellowship, the home groups, the worshipping services, the books and songs that we read and the songs that we sing, and these make up the walls and the roof of our lives. And I strongly note right at this point, denominations are not part of this. You can sing the same songs in so many different denominations. You really can. You can do home groups and read from the same study books in so many different denominations. Denominations are probably sometimes like the colour you paint your house. You know, that's about it. The slap of paint that goes on the outside. Or maybe it's the flowers you have in your garden. I don't know. But it is not the foundation. And it is not the bits that surround it with the walls and everything else. And if someone tries to tell you that a denomination is actually more important than anything else, and that's the foundation, go read the Bible. Go read the Bible. Paul actually addresses denominations quite a bit, especially in the book of Romans, and then in a few others as well, because it causes rifts and schisms. The denominational structure I'm under gives me a framework of making sure that I'm child safe, gives me a framework to say that I'm workplace safe and I'm doing the right things and I'm getting the right training, I'm having the right development, and I'm actually accountable for discipline, oversight and the like. That's what a denomination's there for. It's not there to say, oh, here's a cookie cutter. God knows each one of us beautifully before we were even formed. And in fact, Jeremiah 1:5 reminds us, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And in Psalm 120, it says, I will call upon the Lord in my distress and he will answer me. So the psalmist knows that God's going to be there for him at all times. And Psalm 119 says, your promises preserve my life. And then Psalm 139, it's one of those beautiful passages, a little bit like Jeremiah. And it says, for you created my innermost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Well, beautiful, isn't it? But for what do you toil now? The psalmist focuses on us and what we are toiling for. To build up our own wealth and domains? I think not. To build up our own ego? I think not. The question comes back, are we generous like God, or do we remain selfish? Or, you know, do we invest into our lives the attitudes and the things of God? And I think this is an important thing. You know, as ministers, we now have what's called continuing education. You know, back in the past, they just assumed that you would actually continue to grow and be nurtured as a minister. You would continue to try and strive for the greatest. But now we actually have to put it in there because some ministers went, what do I need to do anymore? I'm now a minister. You know, you can toil away all you want to be, but you'll constantly be tired and not able to do as much as you want if it's not actually toiling for God's work. You're just going to find it exhausts you. And if you're not using the gifts and talents God's given you, you're going to find that it exhausts you. I tell people, I find being in worship with my people here in church, preaching, teaching, being in the crisis points of care and similar, they actually are life-giving for me. And that's where my gifts and talents are best used. There are some aspects of my ministry that I will say, and my elders, my church council, they know what is not my lifeblood. And I've made it clear to them what the church needs to be doing that surrounds the rest of the congregation in the areas where I'm not gifted. Because I'm not Jesus, I'm not gifted in every area. You know, and so what we do to bless the community, if what we do to bless the community which surrounds us is good and profitable, and it actually blesses the community, then that's wonderful. But if what we're doing is actually to build up our own wealth and our own well-being and our own good looks and our own status, and maybe have a bit more affluenza or whatever we want to call it, the disease of wanting more, then that's not good. And it's not actually where our lives are going to be founded really well. I wonder whether we sometimes quit building our spiritual house. I'm amazed at how many people in other occupations just naturally go off and try and better themselves in continuing education, supervision and the like. And yet, for some in the church, even suggesting that they open their Bible once a week. Oh no, I don't have time for that. So you've got time to go to a professional development for 3 hours a week, but you don't have time for 10 minutes of God a week? I just put it out there. I actually think that sometimes we avoid God and rather than build it up. I look for every opportunity when I'm in my car or whether I'm on my motorbike or whether I'm going for a walk with my earphones in, whether I can listen to songs, whether I can listen to a podcast or some Christian teaching or a sermon, something that's going to just bless me and build me up and just fill my life with the word. You know, it's important. Imagine if when I became a Christian and I stopped learning and growing because I went, well, I know enough now. I'm glad I haven't got that attitude because I know I don't have enough. I still know I don't have enough. That's why I'm drawn to want to read the scriptures and connect with God each and every day. The good news is the Bible never, ever changes. The bad news is there's so much in there that we'll constantly be learning until the day we die. I don't know, that's not bad news, but there's a lot in there. You know, and I often see God's hand at work in new and unique ways every single month, and it's just beautiful. And I think the scriptures open my eyes to seeing where God is at work. And I wonder whether sometimes we stop building up the church, building up the body of believers itself. And it's actually a great challenge. Our changed lives come first, and then the building up of God's church follows. But once our lives start building and renovating, then it's probably time for our church to start doing the same thing spiritually. If our lives are starting to grow, blossom, and come alive, then wouldn't you think that the church would be grow, blossoming, and coming alive as we do so together? You know, if I say the word in church, evangelism, people cringe. Straight up, they cringe. But if I say, let's go tell people about the hope of the gospel and where God maybe has answered a prayer in your life, well, it becomes more palatable. That's testimony, which is telling people about God, which is a form of evangelism. What a surprise. We must look actually in all of our churches, not just here at Mount Cola. We do this well at Mount Cola. We must always look at welcoming seekers and discoverers of the faith. A person who doesn't know Jesus, a person who hasn't got our faith yet, well, wouldn't we want them to feel safe discovering God in our church? Of course we would. And you know, when I get back from leave, we're actually going to start a Discovering God course. And we're going to go through some of the aspects of the nature and the purpose and the meaning of who God is and our creation itself and how God is part of that for people who are wanting to discover faith, because I don't think we do it very well anymore. We actually must let people ask the questions that we may not be able to answer easily or immediately. And we've got to respect their journey. Very much so, respect their journey. You know, the passage talks today about setting up a heritage for the children. So David's writing this psalm for Solomon, and the tone's vastly different to how we see Solomon in, say, Ecclesiastes. But his challenge is to Solomon to make sure that in what he does today sows richly into the lives of those who come after him, preparing the way for the next generation. There's always going to be a challenge. I think all of our churches go, we want the next generations to come through. We want young people to come in. And then we mention what some of our young people want to do. But they don't have to do that, do they? Like, I mean, really? Actually, it's the next generation. I think sometimes we actually forget what it was like to be 18 and 20 and in youth groups when I was growing up, and what we wanted to do to change the church to make it more exciting and invigorating for us as young people. And I remember one of the churches where one of my mates was, they got a new minister in, and they had an evening service of some 400 or 500 people, and it was absolutely thumping. And this new minister came in and just shut it down by changing everything back to a traditional liturgy. And they'd gone from having electric guitars and drums and praise and worship that was just amazing. And next thing you know, within about 6 months, the church was down to 50 people. Yeah. Because the young people were not allowed to actually worship God the way they felt they could worship God. They were being held back. And I just hope in my church, there's been some suggestions that have come up over time, and I've had to say, these suggestions are coming from people under 40. How about we listen to them? And us over 50 need to go, okay, let's see how this works. And you know what? Some of the things that have changed have been quite good. Be wise. Do not toil in vain. I wonder if we of the church dare to listen to these words and act on them today. I fear we often spend too much time avoiding decisions, or we go into projects without actually a plan or a vision of tomorrow. Our church is looking at updoing its vision and mission statement stuff over the next 3 months, which I find is exciting, because most of the work they're going to do is while I'm away, because they are the body of believers here in this place. Ministers come and go, but the church remains forever. It's not the minister's role to just set the course for tomorrow, because it's the priesthood of all believers. Now, that doesn't mean that I'll be left out of this whole process. Far from it. I'll be brought back into the process, and I can say, hey, have you considered this? Or you considered this? Oh, yeah. And maybe I'll say, why did you put this in there? And they actually said, because, you know, they might go, because that's really important. Okay, well, let's pray about it. Let's give it up to God now. And let's just, and so I'm excited about where things are going. But is our vain toil doing the things of yesterday and yesterday's seasons? Every church knows how to start a new ministry, but not every church knows how to shut one down. Let me tell you, a couple of years back, well, about 7 years ago, we started a thing called Let's Chat in English. And it was an English conversation class, and it was a bit clunky at first, but it got going quite well. And we got a core group of about 10 to 15 people who'd be coming along. But then the season of that came to a close. Now, it may come back again. And as it was coming to a close, there was some angst about it. There was some challenge about it. But we just got to work out, is that the season for yesterday? And does it need to go into abeyance just for now? And I suspect we'll probably see this come back in the future. I do remember a church that we turned up at as the new minister. And one of the people exclaimed very loudly, oh, how wonderful, with three boys you can restart the boys' brigade that's been shut for 10 years. I said, why am I going to open something that's been shut for 10 years? And they said, because it needs to keep going. But for who does it need to keep going? They just couldn't let go that season had closed and a new season had come. You know, as much as COVID was really an unhappy and unhealthy place for us, it actually saw a great paradigm shift upon the church in how we do ministry and mission. You know, and I think it's interesting of how things have changed. You know, for instance, before COVID, I wasn't doing an online service every week. Now I think I'm over. It must be nearly 300 online services that I've put together with my crew at church, and what a blessing that's been. Children are a heritage, and it seems a bit wordy to but let's look at it. Children are a valuable possession that should be always desired to be attained. And in the Jewish history and the Jewish traditions, children renew the generational lines of the nation. They build up power for the kingdom of tomorrow. And I suspect Solomon was a tad literal with his 700 wives and 300 concubines. He was doing it for the nation. Whatever. Probably not the best decision he ever made. But anyway, children, he had a very big quiver of arrows. The Hebrew people actually saw barrenness as a curse or a falling out of favor with God. And so the prophets would use the terms, O barren woman, or O barren church. And they would challenge the people to say, "What? You've left God. You're not being faithful. Where's the next generations coming through?" See, children showed you were fertile as a couple or as a nation. New life, ministry, and mission in the church shows that we are fertile in how we are living for God. And I think that the barrenness can come when we just fall into we've always done it that way mentality, and we just do it that way and we won't change. So what about the ministry we have? Well, if God builds up and ordains our ministry as the priesthood of all believers, then it will be producing fruit. And we're in a wonderful season of that at the moment at Mount Cola, and it's beautiful. And this then shows how fertile the church is as it reproduces new ministries into the future, and it sees people come into having a faith in Christ Jesus. And so I pinch myself and say I'm proud of the season we're in. Not an arrogant proudness, but I'm really glad to see the church so alive here at Mount Cola. You know, we should be looking to see where mission and its flow takes place into the future. We need to ask if there are things which are blocking fruitful ministry. And what seasons may need to come to an end sooner or later. So what if God calls you to help others discover him? And you might go, oh, say what? No, Nick, that's not my gig. But this is exactly what he calls each one of us to do. We are to give testimony to the gospel, the good news of Jesus. We're given to testimony, give voice to that God is doing things. So do we allow God to build the church? I wonder if we as the church allow God to not only build the house, but also to renovate and make the old one new again. I've renovated a couple of houses now, and I must say renovating a house is a wonderful thing, where you take it from an old shape and an old design and reshape a whole heap of stuff and make it look like one of the best houses yet again. And I gotta say, I wonder if you sometimes look at your own life and think, I'm almost the worst house on the best street. See, God sees the potential in each one of us to renovate our lives. And I wonder whether sometimes we've just fallen into the habits and things have become shabby, things have become run down in our own lives. And God just says, is it time to renovate? Can we as the people of God actually be open to extensions and renovations of our lives and our churches? We often need to do this in our own homes and our church buildings to bring us up to date with where our society's at. But it's never easy. It takes much planning. And sometimes people get a bit cranky because different things change as we go along. So, what's next? We're actually having a season of discernment here at Mount Cola. And so this week, as we go through our season of discernment over the next months, may you remember the two men on the way to Emmaus who walked and talked with Jesus. They didn't realize where the conversation was going, as they were a bit shaken and broken and unsure of the future. And their eyes were opened when they got to Emmaus and Jesus broke bread. And what did they do? They were so moved. They were so shaken. They were so rocked and touched by what had happened there. And then they got up and went all the way back to Jerusalem and told everyone what they had seen and what they had heard, and that Christ was alive. So shaken and changed. Well, this week, may your hearts be filled with joy of anticipation of what God's doing in and through you as the priesthood of believers in this church and wherever you're placing your feet. Look with excitement for the opportunity to discuss where God could be taking you into tomorrow, and be blessed. Amen.